Sutta number 33, the greater discourse on the cowherd. Thus have I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was living in Sawati in Jetta's grove, Anathanpindika's part. There he addressed the monks thus, "Monks, venerable sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Monks, when a cowherd possesses 11 factors, he is incapable of keeping and rearing a herd of cattle." What 11? Here a cowherd has no knowledge of form. He's unskilled in characteristics. He fails to pick out fly eggs. He fails to dress wounds. He fails to smoke out the sheds. He does not know the watering place. He does not know what it is to have drunk. He does not know the road. He's unskilled in pastures. He milks dry. He shows no extra veneration to those bulls who are fathers and leaders of the herd. When a cow herd possesses these 11 factors, he is incapable of keeping and rearing a herd of cattle. So too, monks, when a monk possesses 11 qualities, he is incapable of growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline. What 11? Here a monk has no knowledge of form. He's unskilled in characteristics. He fails to pick out the fly's eggs. He fails to dress wounds. He fails to smoke out the sheds. He does not know the watering place. He does not know what it is to have drunk. He does not know the road. He is unskilled in pastures. He milks dry. And he shows no extra veneration to those elder monks of long standing who have long gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha. How has a monk no knowledge of form? Here a monk does not understand as it actually is thus. All material form of whatever kind consists of four great elements, and the material form derived from those four great elements. That is how a monk has no knowledge of form. Now, also with this is how you don't take things personally. How you see the impersonal nature of all form. This is not me. This is not mine. This I am not. And how is a monk unskilled in characteristics? Here a monk does not understand as it actually is thus. A fool is characterized by his actions. A wise man is characterized by his actions. That is how a monk is unskilled in characteristics. Now here we're talking about keeping precepts. One of the precepts that's very easily broken is gossip. And you hurt other people with gossip, you hurt yourself, You make up stories, so you're not keeping your precepts very well. So this is a very being unskilled in characteristics. How does a monk fail to pick out the fly's eggs? Here, when a thought of sensual desire has arisen, a monk tolerates it. He does not abandon it, remove it, or do away with it, and annihilate it. When a thought of ill will has arisen, when a thought of cruelty has arisen, when evil, unwholesome states have arisen, a monk tolerates them. In other words, you're not paying attention to what your mind is doing, and you're letting your mind ho-hum and go towards the negative and get involved thinking that this is me, this is mine, this is who I am. And you cause yourself immeasurable amounts of pain when you do that. So it's real important that you understand how this process actually does work. He does not abandon them or remove them, do away with them, annihilate them. That is how a monk fails to pick out the fly's eggs. And if you don't pick out the eggs, then those flies are going to be more and more and more and more eggs. And this leads to your unhappiness. This leads to your suffering. And you're doing it to yourself. So many people, especially right now, they try to blame other things rather than take responsibility for their own pain. And that is bringing up unwholesomeness and causing you even more pain because you get more and more involved in these kinds of hindrances. And how does a monk fail to dress wounds? Here, on seeing a form with the eye, a monk grasped at its signs and features. Even though when he leaves the eye faculty unguarded, even unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him, he does not practice the way of its restraint. Now, what are we really talking about here? When you're sitting in meditation, you really need to sharpen your mindfulness to see how your mind gets distracted. And what happens is you have a beautiful sight, let's say a flower or whatever, and you look at the flower for 5 or 10 seconds, and then you start thinking about other things. And that's how the covetousness, I want, comes into your mind. And you get caught. And 1,000 miles away now, you're not with your object of meditation anymore. You're not paying attention to anything. You're getting caught with no mindfulness at all. That's when your mind is ho-humming around, and it causes a lot of suffering. So, why do we recommend the 6 R's? Why do we recommend the 6 R's so that you practice them more so that you can be firm in recognizing when your mind is distracted and you know what to do with it. Too many times we get caught up in our thinking and we try to justify ourselves and we get into our analytical mind and we don't even realize that where you are or what you're doing. We're so caught up in the thinking. And that causes suffering. So please, use your 6 R's, use them often. He does not guard the eye faculty. In other words, you see something beautiful. As soon as you see it, then you start thinking about something else. You don't look at the flower anymore. He does not undertake the restraint of the eye faculty on hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling an odor with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on touching a tangible with the body, on cognizing a mind object with mind. He grasps at it, at their signs and features. Even though when he leaves these faculties unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He does not practice the way of its restraint, staying with whatever that, if it's a sight, if it's a sound, if it's a thought, you can stay with it without letting your mind ho-hum around. And don't allow the distraction to keep you away from what you were doing while you were doing it. Now, there's a lot of people that they tell me, well, at work, I have to sit and think. There's nothing wrong with sitting and thinking as long as you don't let your mind wander away from what you're thinking about. These 6 are a distraction when your mind gets pulled away. And that is letting go of restlessness. Now, if you bring up a feeling of tranquility, restlessness will disappear and you'll be able to stay with whatever you're thinking about. And actually, you will become more efficient with what you're doing while you're doing it. And it gets to be fun that way. So it's a real important thing for you to remember to use your 6 R's with your daily practice on everything that pulls your attention away. He does not guard the sense faculties. He does not undertake the restraint of the sense faculties. That is how a monk fails to dress wounds. And how does a monk fail to smoke out the sheds? Now, this is real important. Here, a monk does not teach others in detail the Dhamma he has learned as he has learned it and mastered it. There are an awful lot of people that do a lot of different practices of meditation. Now, if it's a true Dhamma, it's going to lead to an uplifted mind. It's going to lead to a happy mind. It's going to lead to more equanimity. If the practice you're doing doesn't do that with all of your daily life, then the practice that you're doing, you should examine it a little more closely and see if there's another kind of meditation that will lead you to an uplifted mind. The thing I like about doing the six R's is it naturally leads you to a smiling mind. And the more you smile, the lighter your mind becomes, the more efficient you become with what you're doing while you do it. And this is real important. And life starts to be fun. The more you smile, the more you laugh, the clearer your mind becomes, the better your mindfulness becomes. Excuse me. And this is called smoking out the sheds, letting go of the things that don't work and develop things that do work, that lead to a happy mind, that lead to having more balance in your life. There's a lot of resistance to what I'm going to tell you right now because of this word. Life becomes magical. When you keep your precepts, you follow what we're saying here, and you let go of the things that don't work so well, you smoke out the sheds and develop a mind that leads to balance and happiness. I don't care what kind of meditation you're doing. It doesn't matter to me. If you use the six R's with whatever meditation you're doing, you will see for yourself that you're smoking out the sheds and your mind naturally becomes more happy. I have had some students that were Muslim, and they were devout. They liked to pray five times a day. They were successful with the meditation. And they asked me before they left, they said, "Can I go back to praying five times a day?" And I said, "Well, that's yours. I don't care. It's up to you. Keep using the six R's within any kind of distraction, and you will see much more deeply how those prayers can be a benefit for you. And it's your choice. I don't care what it happens to be." So if you fail to smoke out the sheds, here a monk does not teach others in detail the Dhamma he has learned and mastered. That is how a monk fails to smoke out the sheds. How does a monk not know the watering place? Here a monk does not go from time to time to those monks who have learned much, who are well versed in the tradition, who maintain the Dhamma, the discipline, and the codes. And he does not inquire and ask questions of them. "How is this, venerable sir? What is the meaning of this or that?" Those venerable ones do not reveal to him what has not been revealed. Do not clarify what was not clear, or remove his doubts from the numerous things that give rise to doubt. That is how a monk does not know the watering place. A question that I get quite often is, how do I pick a teacher? And I'm going to tell you right now, you are your own teacher. You go to spiritual friends and you talk with your spiritual friends, and they can be quite helpful. But learn to trust your intuition. Learn to ask yourself questions. I do this every year. Every New Year's Day, I pick a question for myself and see if I can answer it to my satisfaction. See if I really do understand. And some of those questions they're quite naughty. They're difficult to answer. Sometimes I'll go to a monk that I have a lot of respect for their learning and their practice, and discuss with them. But because I live in the middle of the country, and there's not a whole lot of Buddhist monks around, I have to trust my own intuition. So sometimes it takes a little bit longer to come up with an answer, but I still come up with the answer. How does a monk not know what it is to have drunk? Here, when the Dhamma and discipline proclaimed by the Tathagata is being taught, a monk does not gain inspiration in the meaning, does not gain inspiration in the Dhamma, does not gain gladness connected with the Dhamma. That is how a monk does not know what it is to have drunk. Excuse me. I've seen some people go and they try to listen to Dhamma talks and they're not really interested in what's being said. And they're looking around and they're fiddling with their hands and they're not giving ear the way you need to pay attention to the Dhamma. It's being disrespectful to the person that's giving the talk, and to the Dhamma itself. Be attentive. There's a lot of inspiration you can get if the Dhamma talk includes different sayings from the Buddha and includes different suttas from the Buddha. You're going to be real attentive. You're going to be listening without distraction. Now, an interesting thing that happens is that there are some very few people, granted, but there are some people that can become a sotapanna, first stage of awakening, by listening attentively to the Dhamma and understanding how the Dhamma works. You can hear something and all of a sudden, click, I understand that completely. I know what that means. So it is possible for you to attain Nibbana by listening very closely and gain a happy mind while you're doing it. Be appreciative of the Dhamma that you're hearing. It's quite exciting, actually. How does a monk not know the road? Here, a monk does not understand the Noble Eightfold Path as it actually is. That is how a monk does not know the road. Well, what are we talking about here? Know the road. This is the path. 6 hours is the path. That is the fourth noble truth. Now, every time you use the 6 hours, you're practicing the entire Eightfold Path at that time. Don't try to overuse the 6 hours. And don't try to cut out some of the 6 hours. I've had people come to me and they say, well, I had this hindrance arise and I released and relaxed and released and relaxed and I released and relaxed and it was still there. Well, yeah. Doesn't surprise me at all. You're not using the whole formula. You're just using part of it. Don't subtract. Don't add. Use all of the 6 hours. Mind becomes much more clear when you start doing that. And your mindfulness starts improving, so you can start seeing little tiny movements of mind's attention. And you can relax into that. You can use the 6 hours into that. That is the path. That is the road to the cessation of suffering. How is a monk unskilled in pastures? Here a monk does not understand the four foundations of mindfulness as they actually are. That is how a monk is unskilled in the pastures. An interesting thing about the four foundations of mindfulness is how much people really do misunderstand it. It's really interesting because when you start looking closely at what the four foundations of mindfulness are and how they use them, it's talking about insight and jhana practice conjoined. The word jhana is so much misunderstood, it's really kind of sad. Jhana is a level of your understanding. Now, when you go from one jhana to the next, you have a different understanding of how mind is working. You see it more clearly. You have different experiences from one jhana to the next. One level of understanding to the next. So it doesn't mean concentration. It means insight and tranquility, understanding by itself. Conjoined. If you have an ox cart and One bowl is called mindfulness, and the other bowl is called collectedness. If you want to go in a straight line, they have to be pulling together at the same time with the same amount of energy. So it's real important to understand that the four foundations of mindfulness, this is basically what it's trying to tell you. There are other suttas that they talk about insight as well as collectedness and jhana practice, how they're intertwined, how they actually work together. I know for 20 years I did a practice where I was doing, quote, straight vipassana. And there was a lot of pain and suffering that happened because of practicing that way. When I learned to put the jhana practice, the serenity with the insight, all of a sudden the pains went away. The suffering stopped. I started understanding more and more deeply how life actually works, how the process of life actually works. And how does a monk milk dry? Here, when faithful householders invite a monk to take as much as he likes of robes, alms food, resting place, and medicinal requisites, the monk does not know moderation in accepting. That is how a monk milks dry. Because we rely on the kind generosity of other people. I've seen some monks that they really go crazy with, especially food. They get a particular food they like and they really load up on it and eat a lot. Moderation. Oh, I want some more of that. No, monks are not supposed to do that. Take a little. Share it with your other monks. That's the way we're supposed to do things. And we're not supposed to ask for, quote, donations. We're not supposed to even ask for medicinal medicines. Now, one thing I've learned over the years is that it's much better for me not to say anything about my health. Because when I mention something about my health, all of a sudden I have 20 different remedies that people send to me so I can get over the problem that I have. So now I know moderation about that, about medicines. I don't mention it very often. Okay. And how does a monk show no extra veneration to those elder monks of long standing who have long gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha, Here a monk does not maintain bodily acts of loving kindness, both openly and privately, towards those elder monks. He does not maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. He does not maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. That is how a monk shows no extra veneration to those elder monks of long standing who have long gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha. When a monk possesses these 11 qualities, he is incapable of growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline. Monks, when a cowherd possesses 11 factors, he is capable of keeping and rearing a herd of cattle. What, 11? Here a cowherd has knowledge of form. He is skilled in characteristics. He picks out flies' eggs. He dresses wounds. He smokes out the sheds. He knows the watering place. He knows what it is to have drunk. He knows the road. He is skillful in pastures. He does not milk dry. And he shows extra veneration to those bulls who are fathers and leaders of the herd. Then a cowherd possesses 11 factors. He is capable of keeping and rearing a herd of cattle. I can't see the clock. What time is it? Okay. So too, monks, when a monk possesses these 11 qualities, he is capable of growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline. What 11? Here a monk has knowledge of form. He is skilled in characteristics. He picks out the fly's eggs. He dresses wounds. He smokes out the sheds. He knows the watering place. He knows what it is to have drunk. He knows the road. He is skilled in pastures. He does not milk dry. And he shows no extra veneration to those elder monks of long standing who have long since gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha. How does a monk have knowledge of the form? Here, monk understands as it actually is thus. All material form of whatever kind consists of the four great elements, and the material form derived from the four great elements. That is how a monk has knowledge of form. How is a monk skilled in characteristics? Here a monk understands as it actually is thus. A fool is characterized by his actions. A wise man is characterized by his actions. That is how a monk is skilled in characteristics. And again, we're just talking about being able to recognize that a monk, when you meet them, you get a feel from them that they keep their precepts and you can trust what they say. So you start talking with that monk and find out, you can learn some things from that monk. And it's kind of fun. Excuse me. excuse me. And you see some monks that they don't choose to keep their precepts very well. They're always sloppy. They're always criticizing. They don't teach the Dhamma. They teach whatever they think is correct. So you stay away from those kind of monks. Again, you trust your intuition. How does a monk pick out the fly's eggs? Here, when a thought of sensual desire has arisen, a monk does not tolerate it. He abandons it, removes it, six-Rs it, does away with it, and annihilates it. When a thought of ill will has arisen, when a thought of cruelty has arisen, when an ill, evil, unwholesome state has arisen, a monk does not tolerate them. He abandons them, six-Rs them, removes them. That's what the six-Rs are for, removing these unwholesome states. Why does it work? Because you're learning more and more about craving and how to let go of the craving. And this is exceptionally important. This is how a monk picks out the fly's eggs. How does a monk dress wounds? Here, on seeing a form with the eye, a monk does not grasp at its signs and features. Since if he left the eye faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He practices the way of its restraint. Excuse me. It's really kind of interesting that a lot of people, they think, well, that means you can't enjoy life because you can't look at a beautiful flower or some artwork. You can, but you'll look at it completely without thinking. And you will really get to experience the flower or the artwork or what it is you're looking at. And you'll know it very deeply. So this doesn't mean that you can't enjoy things. You can. Just don't let your mind fade away and start thinking about this and that while you're looking. Because you're not looking anymore. You're thinking. And that's why you need the six arts. He guards the eye faculty, undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty. On hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling an odor with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on touching a tangible with the body, on cognizing the mind object with mind. A monk does not grasp at their signs and features. Since if he left those faculties unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. How does a monk smoke out the sheds? Here a monk teaches others in detail the Dhamma he has learned and mastered it. That is how a monk smokes out the sheds. Now, I will tell a lot of people that I've practiced this way, I've practiced that way, I've done this kind of practice, I've done that kind of practice. And it doesn't necessarily lead to what I want the end result to be. But when I added the six Rs, whatever practice I was doing, it did lead to the end result. That's how powerful the six R's are. It is right effort. And this is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. It will take you all the way to arahatship. It will help purify your mind. And you'll start noticing personality development when you use the six R's. It actually starts to be quite fun. So, give it a try. And how does a monk know the watering place? Here a monk goes from time to time to such monks who have learned much, who are well versed in the tradition, who maintain the Dhamma, the discipline and codes, and he inquires and asks questions of them. How is this, venerable sir? What is the meaning of this? These venerable ones reveal to him what has not been revealed, if they know it. That's the key. I ask quite often, I ask monks questions that they don't have the experience or understanding of what I'm asking. So I go to another one. It's always fun being around elder monks. But the thing that bothers me is I'm turning into an elder monk. Oh, well. That's what happens. These monks will reveal to him what has not been revealed, clarify what is not clear, and remove his doubt from the numerous things that have given a rise to doubt. That is how a monk knows the watering place. How does a monk know what it is to have drunk? Here, when the Dhamma and discipline proclaimed by the Tathagata is being taught, a monk gains inspiration in the meaning, inspiration in the Dhamma. This is one of the reasons that I spend a lot of time giving definitions so that you can get inspired to try it yourself. Gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. That is how a monk knows what it is to have drunk. How does a monk know the road? Here a monk understands the Eightfold Path as it actually is. That is how a monk understands the road. He understands the six R's and how to use them. Here a monk skilled in pastures. Here a monk understands the four foundations of mindfulness as they actually are. And that is how a monk is skilled in the pastures. I found it real interesting when I was in Asia and I was really into the straight Vipassana, the Burmese style, that a lot of the monks would take one foundation and just try to study that. And the foundations, they're all conjoined. You go from one to the next to the next. This is how it works. And if you just try to say, I know one monk, he said, well, I'm just studying Chaitanya Upasana. And I asked him what that meant. And he said, I'm studying mind. okay, what's that mean? And he couldn't give me a real answer. So what was he studying? He was pretending. He was pretending to be an intellectual. I know this, and I'm studying that. So that gives me a lot of pride. Well, there's nothing in Buddhism that has much to do with pride. It's understanding and giving that understanding away to other people, helping other people to be happy. That is the gift of Buddhism and practicing generosity. That's why I tell people at the end of the retreat, when you go home, I want you to smile and give your smile away. Walk down the street and smile. Go to a store and smile. Help other people have an uplifted mind. Say things that make them happy. Say things that are appreciative. Too many times, especially with the news the way it is now, there is so much talk about unwholesomeness and anger and dissatisfaction. Well, do you want to affect the world around you that way? It's up to you. You can believe what somebody else says that's very negative. Okay, fine. Or you can let go of what they think is and talk about what's uplifting, what's fun, what makes you happy, how you affect the world around you is up to you. You can affect the world around you in a negative way. You can affect it around you in a positive way. It's your choice, and it's your world that you live in. So choose wisely. And how does a monk not milk dry here? When faithful householders invite a monk to take as much as he likes of robes, alms food, resting place, and medicinal requisites, the monk knows moderation and accepting. I had one student that she became a bhikkhuni, or a seminary. And she went out for buying something. I don't know what it was. And I went with them. And they asked her if she wanted some ice cream. And she said, yes. There's nothing wrong with that. And then when she finished, they asked her if she wanted some more. Now, the proper answer is no, moderation. Or maybe I'll try a different kind, moderation. That was a hard lesson for me to teach her because of her attachment and always wanting a little bit more. So that is how a monk does not milk dry. There's a story in the Vinaya that this one monk, he had a place that was very nice, but there was a lot of ravens that were around. They were always cawing. So he went to his teacher and he said, how can I get rid of these ravens? How can I make them not not bother me. Because they would go in to when he wasn't there and they would do things like take his water filter and his toothbrush, and they'd take all kinds of things. So his teacher said, every day before you go up for alms round, ask them to give you a feather. And after he did this for a period of time, he was able to read the thoughts of the birds, and they were starting to get angry because he was always asking them for something. And after a period of time, they disappeared because he kept asking them to give me this, give me that. So don't milk things dry. Don't ask for things over and over again and kind of demand it because I'm a monk. You've got to give to me. No, that's not the way it works. How does a monk show extra veneration to those elder monks of long standing who have long gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha? Here a monk maintains bodily acts of loving kindness, both openly and privately, towards those elder monks. He maintains verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. He maintains mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. That is how a monk shows extra veneration to those elder monks of long standing who have long gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha. When a monk possesses these 11 qualities, he is capable of growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline. That is what the Blessed One said. The monks were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Now, this is talking a lot about monks, but it's also about laymen and how you can improve your behavior and be a wise person. So, I've been talking for a long time. Do you have any questions?
Hello, Bante.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask, when we start the meditation, we start the center of the chest. There is also a point which is said, Hataya Vattu, which is just below the rib cage. So can we concentrate from there, or center of chest would do?
From your heart, from the center of your chest. Get when you're practicing loving kindness, bring up that feeling of radiation. You also want to bring up the feeling of your wish and put that feeling in the center of your heart and put your friend in the center of that. So feel the wish. As you're wishing happiness for your friend, okay?
Okay, Bante. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Hello, Bante.
Hello.
Hi. My question, I have two questions. The first one is, you are saying that, like, in the Sutta, it says that regarding four foundations,
yeah,
and I based on my understanding, I can say that these four foundations, when we are practicing, kind of we will pay attention. How can I, let me reframe it. When we do meditation, time to time we see different foundations.
Right.
And it is incorrect to say, I do just the foundation of feelings.
Right.
Is my understanding is correct?
It is.
Okay. I have another question. This is not related to meditation.
Okay.
Regarding karma, what is the positive way to look at karma for meditation?
The reason that this meditation works is because you're using the six R's and letting go of craving. Craving is unwholesome. So the more you do the six R's, the more you're letting go of craving, the more you are gaining good karma. Okay?
Okay.
And smiling is good karma. So I want you to smile. Okay?
Okay, Bhante. That's all. I don't have other questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you for this talk.
You're very welcome. Mark, your shirt is wonderful.
My shirt.
The shirt you have on right now.
Yeah. I know. I was just sitting up so you could, so that the other people could see it a little better.
Oh, yeah. It's a 6R shirt. Perfect. So, how are you, Inigo? I haven't seen you for a long time.
No, I'm very well, thank you, Bhante. It's great to see you. I was hoping to come to a retreat, but it kind of got disrupted. But hopefully, maybe next year.
Now, one thing that we're considering right now is giving retreats so that you can stay at home and do your sitting there. And I would give you an interview every day and a Dhamma talk every evening. We're considering that, how to do it, because there's a lot of different time zones that we have to work through to be able to do this.
That would be brilliant, Bhante.
So we're going to give it a try, see if we can get it arranged.
Excellent.
We'll let you know.
Thank you.
And hello to your son.
He's in good health, Bhante. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have a question?
Bhante, thank you for your talk today. I have a question. You said earlier we have to be our own teachers.
Yes.
At what point does that happen? Like, I feel like I'm too much of a beginner to teach myself, or I will get lost just reading lots of stuff. And I can't tell what's happening in my practice all the time either. So, like, at what point would I, what are the markers, if you will, that you're ready to start teaching yourself and not relying on guidance so much?
Well, you know, when the Buddha was still a bodhisattva, he ran across a lot of problems with meditation that he was doing. And what he did was ask his intuition to tell him the right thing. It gave him the insight. that he needed to overcome the hindrance. So you ask yourself, if you have, let's say, a hindrance that keeps on coming up and is really troublesome, ask yourself, what is the cause of this always coming up? Why is this happening? And then you go back to your meditation and you will get the answer. And you'll know what to do with it. It's just a matter of learning to trust that little quiet mind that is your intuition. Now, the Bodhisattva had to do this because there was nobody else around that he could ask. He had to figure out a way that he could do it for himself. If you have fear, if you have anxiety, ask yourself, what's the cause of this? Why is this coming up now? And you will get the answer. Once you have the answer, you'll say, oh, yeah, that's right. This is what I'm doing. And I need to stop doing it this way. I need to do it another way. And I'm always available. If I can help you, I will.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Karuna, how have you been?
Very well, thank you. Yes.
happy to see you again.
Very happy as well. Thank you.
Okay. So anybody else have a question?
When is the right time to for the past life memories? When is the right time to recall them? Is it
Can you hear? Oh. You need to turn your microphone on, Karen, if you want to ask a question.
Yes, Bhante.
Okay. What was your question?
About past life memory. What is the best time in a meditation to be able to recall that memory?
Actually, I don't like to about past lives until you have gotten to at least strong, and when I say strong, I mean very strong equanimity. Because a lot of past lives, we've all done things that aren't so easy to understand. And you need to have equanimity. So when you've developed enough equanimity and you have your balance of mind, then I'll consider teaching you how to remember past lives. Okay? Anybody else? Okay, then let's share some merit.
Suffering ones.
Be suffering free and the fear struck fearless.
May the breathing shall breathe and may all be find relief.
May all be share the merit that we have acquired by the position of all kinds of happiness. Inhabiting space and earth, devas and devas, may the ground protect the Buddhist meditation. So I hope you all have a happy week and lots of smiles and laughs. Okay.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you, Bhante.